Today on the 21st show, how would you like to live in Indiana? And I don't mean moving there, but rather having your part of Illinois defect and become part of the Hoosier state. People in a third of Illinois counties have voted in favor of a referendum that would separate Chicagoland and the rest of Illinois. Now, Indiana lawmakers are playing along, recently signing into law the creation of a committee that would research those counties joining the Hoosier state. We'll talk about how realistic all this is and the feelings that are driving that sentiment. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. Airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WNIJ in Rockford DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, the news. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. The organizing principle of the United States is right there in the name. 50 different states and commonwealths coming together to form one nation, e pluribus unum. Delaware was first, becoming a state in 1787. Most of the early states were formed from British colonies. The majority of the remaining states were organized out of territories, including Illinois. A few states were formed from parts of existing states. Maine came out of Massachusetts, and Kentucky was cleaved from Virginia. The process continued through 1959, when Alaska and Hawaii were admitted to the Union. Since then, there has been talk of adding more states. There are movements to get Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico added. Lately, President Donald Trump has talked about adding Canada and Greenland, though the sovereign foreign governments over those countries will have something to say about that. But that is a digression. The reason we're outlining this history is that there's also a movement right here in Illinois to create a new state. Voters in 33 counties have said they want to explore making a new state without Chicago and Cook County. Lawmakers in our neighboring state of Indiana have also inserted themselves into this conversation, proposing to annex some of those would-be breakaway counties. They've even created a committee to look into how this could happen.
We don't want to see our neighbors to our west languish. Ultimately, their success or failure affects our own success or failure. But it's up to them to change their course. And in the meantime, to the Illinois counties and residents, feeling unheard and unrepresented, we hear you, and we'd like to invite you to come back home again to Indiana.
Indiana Speaker Todd Huston. To be clear, the likelihood of something like this is extremely low. One would have to get Illinois' supermajority Democratic state legislature on board. But the feeling underlying this movement is real. So today, for the hour, we're revisiting our conversation on the idea of a divorced Illinois. The legality of how it might work, the obstacles to making it happen, and the broader context of the partition movement in America. Joining us for this conversation was G.H. Merritt, chairwoman of New Illinois. It's a nonpartisan organization looking to educate Illinoisans on how they can pursue formation of a new state. The group actually spoke with Indiana elected officials. More on that in a bit. Also with us was Lorette Newland, director of the Illinois Separation Referendum. The question is, put partition questions on downstate county ballots. And Dana Balut, a documentary producer based in Los Angeles, but more to the point in our conversation, helped produce and write the podcast The Last Resort, which looks at similar movements happening in Canada. And finally, Eric Cunningham is the founder and editor-in-chief of Elections Daily. Eric's written about the history of secession movements in the U.S. Because our conversation's on tape, we are not taking calls live, but you will hear some from our original broadcast. Nevertheless, you can let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. All right, listeners, I want to mention, I'm sure there's a lot of feeling out there. We got a lot of text messages about this. We'll be sharing those as we continue through the show. For example, Tom in Elburn said, in part, "I hate the outsized influence of Cook County on the rest of Illinois. There's a total disconnect between the 10 million in Cook County and the rest of the state. The politics are polar opposites. JB would never be elected governor without that Cook County Democratic base. The frustration runs deep." I think you might have overstated the population of Cook County there. We'll fact check that. But Eric in Normal said, if my downstate county was annexed by Indiana, I would move away. I'm more than okay with the protected individual liberties, higher taxes on businesses and the wealthy, and better fire control laws afforded by our state, Eric said. All right, G.H. Merritt from New Illinois, I'm going to start with you. What prompted you to start this organization?
Well, I think growing up in Illinois, it's a wonderful place with wonderful people and the most fertile farmland in the world, but you always knew something was a bit off. As a child, that really hit me when our Secretary of State, Paul Powell, died and they found shoeboxes full of cash in his hotel room. But more immediately, it was getting out of graduate school and having to look for a job for 2 years, which that was in 2008, and started looking at Department of Labor Statistics data and was shocked to find out that Illinois had one of the highest unemployment rates in the country. And it seemed, well, this is really curious, why? And that's where it started from.
So the unemployment rate. All right, Lorette, I'm going to bring you into the conversation. Lorette Newland, who is director of the Illinois Separation Referenda. What inspired this this movement?
Well, our founder was very disturbed by the number of unconstitutional laws that the Illinois legislature was passing and the representation issue.
Can you give some examples of the sort of laws you're talking about?
Yes, particularly the Second Amendment. Illinois is the only state in the union to have a FOID card requirement.
So gun laws, that sort of thing is what you're talking about?
Yes, that was a big driving force. And at the time, a law had been passed. It was temporary, but it was offensive that you could have surveillance by drones, warrantless.
So tell me about why did you decide to go with referenda as opposed to, you know, petitioning state legislators or some of the other approaches you could take?
Well, the consent of the governed, for one thing. An opinion poll is really depending on who you sample, but a referendum gives every voter the equal opportunity to participate, and it really demonstrates in a constitutionally recognized way the will of the governed.
All right. G.H., I think I do want to ask one thing that often comes up in these conversations, and maybe this is just sort of a clarification of terms as we're getting started. You often hear of this referred to as a secession movement. I understand you're not a fan of that framing. I myself have tried to use partition. Talk about why what the difference you see there is.
The way I describe it is secession is I didn't get my way in the election, so I'm going to take my marbles and go home. What we are doing is something that's legal and constitutional. It's a process found in Article 4, Section 3 of the U.S. Constitution. So even if it were a technically appropriate term, I wouldn't want to use it because of the connotation. We don't want to be associated with the Confederacy or racism or anything like that. And I think the term secession brings those kind of questions up.
All right, Dana Balut, I want to bring you into the conversation now. Talk about some of the movements you have been seeing coming up in California with regard to this stuff.
Yeah, sure. So there are two big movements in California. One is called CalExit, and the name kind of was inspired by Brexit. But Marcus Ruiz Evans, in the first, when Trump was first elected, formed this group called CalExit, where he is and now continues to advocate for California being its own country, so actually seceding from the United States. And that's more of a liberal perspective. Often we see these movements led by more conservative voices, and here in California, CalExit is more of a liberal movement saying, you know what, like California values are clearly not in line with those of the rest of the country. excuse me. So why not just become our own country? We are the sixth largest economy in the world. California can survive on its own, kind of thing. And then the other movement is in Northern California, where it's quite the opposite. The state of Jefferson is a movement. It's more, I would say it's more of a mindset and a movement rather than, a full secessionist movement. But they do, the state of Jefferson basically advocates for Southern Oregon and Northern California to become its own territory and its own state. And that is led mainly by more rural conservative voices.
Probably a similar sentiment to the one we're seeing expressed in downstate Illinois, I would imagine.
Yes, very much so. That, Sacramento and Portland very much do not represent us and take up, all the attention, and our representatives do not represent us and don't represent our values. So, yeah, similar to the movement that you're speaking of.
Yeah. Eric Cunningham, I want to bring you into the conversation now, editor of Elections Daily. This idea of secession, partitioning of states, it's nothing new in the history of the U.S. How far back do these conversations go?
They go back to the very founding of the country. The my state, North Carolina, we used to have all of Tennessee as part of our borders, and that was handed over to the government after the Revolutionary War. But there had been movements to, even before that land was handed over, to create a new state out of part of North Carolina. Usually, these sorts of movements have popped up because of issues with the state capitol, or specifically lack of access to state services, which is less of a concern today. That, back, 100, 200 years ago, if you couldn't get to the state capitol, you were potentially unable to get a lot of access to territorial services. So similar to what we have right now, in terms of a political dispute, but a lot more practical.
Right, the horse ride to the Capitol, if it took, 3 weeks instead of 4 days or something, I can see. Yeah.
This is the reason why we have two Dakotas, for example. There was a political reason for it, but also genuinely, people in South Dakota would have had a hard time getting to North Dakota's capital and vice versa. It would have taken a very, very long time to get there. But in terms of success, we've not actually had like an uncontested success since Maine, in 1820. West Virginia is a very, very strange case of this because it only happened during the Civil War because the majority government of Virginia voted to secede, and then the remaining counties in West Virginia realized they could use this opportunity to take control of the Union government and then secede themselves and become West Virginia. So we've really not had a serious movement for like to do this outside of the Civil War in over 200 years. It's been a very, very long time since there's been an actual serious movement to admit a new state with this myth.
Yeah. All right, Laurette Newman of the Illinois Separation Referendum. How would this actually work in your view? How would partition come about?
Well, ours is kind of a roundabout approach. It is not required by the U.S. Constitution to involve the county board, but our founding fathers did not put a lot of stipulations, just two, and they left it up to each area and each era for how they figured out how to get from point A to point B. So our government is considerably larger than it was when Maine separated, and so we're taking it to a smaller unit of government. Plus, as Andrew Anjeski, who founded Open the Books, and also was a resident of Chicago, he said that Illinois lacks transparency in their financial dealings. And so we figure that who would know better their particular county's finances than the county boards? And also, we are not sure which counties will want to explore this. And so rather than assuming, we're doing it county by county. So far, everybody wants to look into it. And
When you say every, there were a 30, it's up to 33 counties where voters have approved this.
yes, that's
Is that
right.
right? Yeah. And are there more, is it coming to a referenda or to a ballot referenda soon in other counties? Is that something underway? Can you say?
I am not a prophet, but we do have a lot of requests for petitions. We never know what's going to happen. COVID, for example, no one had expected that we would get 50 to 75 on the ballot in 2020. Well, we missed that.
I see. And so what would happen next? Let's say, you know, I mean, do you envision getting to a majority of counties, or what is the next step then? Do you take that sort of as a petition to the legislature, or what happens?
Well, the referendum wording, I should bring that up since it hasn't been, shall the board of, and you fill in the name of your county, I'm going to say Jasper County because that's where I'm from, Jasper County correspond with the boards of the other counties of Illinois outside of Cook County about the possibility of separating from Cook County to form a new state and to seek admission to the union as such, subject to the approval of the people. So the referendum doesn't make the separation happen, and it's non-binding. So we understand that we can't force the county board to correspond with the other county board members that would be that have passed other counties where the referendum has been passed. However, their job is to represent us, and we would like to think that they would honor the will of their constituents. And then after they do the looking at it financially, then go to the next step of approaching the legislature. Now, a constitution would need to be written. New Illinois is doing a fantastic job on that, and perhaps would want to share that.
Yeah, and we can come back to that after the break. We do need to take a break here on the program. Let me take a moment to step in here and say this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the idea of a new Illinois, as some call it, partitioning us into two states. One of the examples people have been talking about would be having Cook County and Chicago being one state, the rest of Illinois being another. Indiana's also getting involved in this conversation, talking about the annexation of some of these counties. Of course, that would all have to go through the Democratic supermajority Illinois General Assembly. We're going to get back into the legality of all this and some of the basis for how it could work if it were ever to happen. This is the 21st show. Stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. Today we're listening back to our conversation about movements in Illinois to partition Chicago and Cook County into their own state. There's also a movement in the Indiana legislature to research the idea of annexing some of our southern counties. I do want to fact check a couple of points that came up earlier in the show. The population of Cook County is 5 million people. That's about 40% of our state. It becomes a majority if you include the other collar counties. I do also want to mention that Hawaii, Massachusetts, and New Jersey are the other states that require residents to get a firearm identification card. Joining us for this conversation was Eric Cunningham, the founder and chief executive of Elections Daily. He's written about the history of secession and partition movements in the U.S. Dana Balut, a documentary producer based in Los Angeles, who helped produce and write the podcast The Last Resort, which looks at a similar movement happening in California. Lorette Newland, director of the Illinois Separation Referendum, which has put partition questions on downstate county ballots. G.H. Merritt, chairwoman of New Illinois, the nonpartisan organization that says it's looking to educate Illinoisans on how they could pursue formation of a new state. And the group actually spoke with Indiana officials. This is a conversation we first aired in March, so no live calls, but we did ask our texting group about it. Tony in Champaign said, I appreciate being in Lincoln State and would not like being in a more conservative state, Indiana. However, our southern counties seem out of place, and I can see why they'd like to switch. All in all, I would oppose the change. Meanwhile, Franny in Hinckley said, really? Is this necessary? Some may say we're a blue state, but we have had many Republican governors in my lifetime. Are these Illinois complainers not pleased with the innovations Trump has enacted? Again, no live calls today, but you can let us know what you think by emailing talk@21stshow.org. All right, GH, I understand you actually met with Indiana legislators about this. How did that come about?
They called and asked us to come and testify at their legislative committee hearing. And so I went along with a colleague who's an attorney from Barrington. And so we don't have an interest in being a part of another state, but we wanted to go and talk to them. We also wanted them to know that although 33 counties had passed the referendum, and hopefully it'll eventually be on the ballot of all the counties, we have a group that's operating in a bunch of different counties than that. And so in actuality, there is an active state split movement in 68 counties. And so that's 2/3 of the state of Illinois. And so what I should probably jump in here and say, like what Dana was talking about with the state of Jefferson and Cal Exit, I did listen to her podcast, most of it, and that really isn't like us, because I think you could almost call us apolitical. We're a state split organization. Our focus areas are representative government, government corruption, and our state's enormous fiscal catastrophe. And the only issue we've ever taken a position on is school choice, but we don't even talk about other issues unless they're connected to our three focus areas. So I thought that was important to point out.
Yeah, we have a little more tape here from the Indiana House Speaker, Todd Houston. This is a snippet from a news conference he gave in January. Let's listen to that.
In that same period of time, over 100,000 Illinois residents have chosen to leave Illinois and come to Indiana for a whole host of reasons, including us being, you know, one of the best states in the Midwest to do business, our number one tax climate, and many, many other things. So, look, we're excited about offering the opportunity for these fine folks to join our state. We're excited about the opportunity to celebrate all the great things that are going on in Indiana. And we think that instead of succeeding in creating a 51st state, they should just join us.
All right. Lorette, let me ask you, since we heard GH is not interested in joining Indiana, what aspects, I guess, of Indiana-style governance would you like to see in Illinois?
Well, it does seem like their laws are more compatible with those of the counties that have passed the referendum. So that's not really necessarily style, but just an observation. Truthfully, I haven't studied the Indiana method. I've been pretty preoccupied with Illinois.
Yeah. Would you, so, I mean, what do you think, I guess, of the overall idea of some, you know, if there could, again, with this would all require the assent of the Illinois General Assembly, but if there could be some swap where parts of Illinois would become parts of Indiana, is that something you would favor?
Oh, that's complicated. My answer would take longer than the allotted time, probably. But I will just say two things. One, it is validating to have them take notice of our referendum and take it seriously, unlike the dismissive attitude of our government, of our governor especially. And then they do not have the consent of the governed to acquire us. The people who voted on the referendum voted to separate from Cook County. Now, we have a lot of people who are fine with the idea of joining Indiana, but we have some who are saying, that's not what I voted for. And they're not wrong. So I believe that if it should progress to the point that there would be an Illinois legislative vote, they should first go back and put a referendum on those 33 counties and ask them if they want to become part of Indiana. So that's the easy answer, and it's the shortest one, but there's a lot more to it.
Sure. And GH, you have your hand up?
I do. Yeah, I love the way Indiana has in their constitution, a limit on property taxes. But I wanted to mention that while in Indiana, I had a wonderful conversation with Representative Reagan Hatcher, She's the daughter of, I don't know if you remember, Richard Hatcher. He was the first African-American mayor of a city of over 100,000 people. And he was very, you know, prominent from the 60s to the 80s. And she was experiencing something similar to us, because she was in a county that was mostly Democrat, up in northwestern Indiana. And but because the legislature was dominated by Republicans, she felt like they didn't really have a voice. And so she, in that committee meeting, brought up the idea of, well, would this border commission work both ways? Now, the reason why I found it so interesting to talk to her is because we don't look at this as a red-blue divide. It's a rural versus urban, small town and suburban divide. And it dates back to the Reynolds v. Sims ruling in 1964, which changed the way state legislatures were apportioned. They were trying to correct an injustice in the state of Alabama. And all they did was move that injustice to another part of the country, to another group of people. And so what Representative Hatcher was experiencing is the same thing we experience in outstate Illinois, that one county is dominating the state legislature and the rest of the counties really have no voice.
Let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. We have Rich calling from Champaign. Rich, thanks for calling in.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, this is great. People, if they want to expend their energy on this, that's fine. But my point is like, can the entire country do this? I mean, are you going to have Houston, you know, become its city state? Or are you going to have, you know, Houston and San Antonio and Austin and Texas become their own? I mean, it's basically you're devolving the country into city states and you're just creating, you know, additional forms of government. And people always complain about, you know, we got too many units of government in Illinois already. But thanks for taking my call.
All right. Thanks for that, Rich. Yeah, I guess I can bounce this over to Eric Cunningham. I don't know. Do you see maybe there just needs to be a whole sort of national game of musical chairs, right? I'm sure there are a lot of people in blue cities and red states who feel pretty well unrepresented, as people in the rural counties of Illinois feel unrepresented by our leadership here.
Oh, undoubtedly, there are a large number of movements all over the country for any number of reasons to partition states. A couple of years back, there were some counties in Colorado that wanted to split off. There were like four of them that were upset about an oil bill, wanted to split off. There have been counties in Kansas in the 90s that wanted to split off. It's very common to see these sorts of things. You were seeing actually a similar movement in Oregon recently to try and move some counties in Oregon over to Idaho. And the interesting thing with that movement is that's explicitly with the goal of moving over to Idaho. And even though the counties that it's passed in have all been very, very Republican counties, about as Republican as the counties in Illinois, those measures have only passed by smaller margins, 5, 10, 15%. Whereas the advisory items, you know, referendum pieces in Illinois, which are only talking about making a new state, have passed by a larger margin. So I almost think there may be a correlation between some people may want to make their own state, but they may be less comfortable with moving over to, say, Indiana or to Idaho rather than having their own. You know, you're basically going from being part of one big state to another big state. That's kind of something that I've seen or have considered recently.
Dana Balut, I wonder how what you've been hearing, the caller and everything else, how that does or does not, you know, sort of match what you've covered in happening in California and Oregon.
I think, you know, there are some parallels in the end. You know, the root of this is dissatisfaction with your not feeling represented, not feeling like your values are represented, and feeling largely ignored. Like, I think with the state of Jefferson, people and communities that now, I think, similar to what Eric was saying, now very much endorse this, quote, greater Idaho movement that, you know, would encompass California's northern counties and some rural Oregon counties. you know, rural communities in California, especially in the far north, feel very much ignored. And I think that that sentiment, you know, you can see that in a lot of these secession or separatist movements around the country. Whether they're successful or not, I'm not sure, but it is something to be something to note that a lot of people, especially, I think, you know, especially in rural counties, feel largely unrepresented and ignored.
All right, let's go back to the phones, 800-222-9455. Andy is calling from Bureau County. Andy, thank you for calling in.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Something I just wanted to kind of say, I currently live in rural Illinois. I grew up in rural Illinois. I've lived in the Chicago area in northwest Indiana. And the reality is that what people need to remember is that day to day, there's very little difference, really, in living in any of those areas. And I really feel like the political climate right now, to kind of go off of what I believe one of your guests said, that it is a country-urban sort of issue. And I get that. Again, I grew up with that. But I also recognize that the political climate right now is kind of creating a perfect storm where more people are willing to throw their weight behind this issue.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's definitely a time of heightened political anxiety and angst, if you will. Andy, thanks for sharing your perspective. I appreciate that. You know, Eric, it's interesting because there was a past secession. There have been multiple past secession or partition efforts in Illinois. There was a case where Chicago wanted to become its own state. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so this actually goes directly back into that Reynolds v. Sims ruling that was mentioned earlier. Prior to this ruling, state legislatures were allowed to apportion districts, congressional or state legislative districts, in a manner that wasn't equal to population. Today, you need one person, one vote is the rule, so you can't say give each county one senator or one representative. You have to do it fairly by population. Before that, though, states were free to give, say, Cook County only a limited number of senators, far fewer than you would otherwise have been entitled to if it was done on a population basis. And that's the reason why in 1925, Chicago was, and Cook County, which was Chicago represented almost all of Cook County's population at that time, they had floated leaving and making their own state. They felt underrepresented because they had fewer representatives than their population would have suggested. Now you have the opposite, of course. You have Chicago and Cook County and the suburban counties in the north making up the vast majority of districts in Illinois, while you have the land in the southern and downstate portions making up a majority of the area, but not even a third of the population in a lot of cases. So it's kind of swung the other direction now. You've seen there's been other movements. There are movements in like the 1800s to move a couple of counties over to Wisconsin. There are movements in the 70s to emphasize the people in Western Illinois who felt forgotten. That was the Forgottonia movement. But it's interesting to compare like that pendulum that was mentioned, that, you know, the power that used to be rest a lot of the times in downstate Illinois has, for the last, since Reynolds v. Sims, has moved increasingly towards Chicago and towards Cook County.
Yeah, and that's only accelerated in the last decade or so. I mean, we did have a Republican governor of Illinois just 10 years ago. It's hard to remember now, but this was a closer question. We had a Republican U.S. senator who took office after Barack Obama became president. So there used to be more of a divide here. All right, let me reintroduce our conversation. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're listening back to our program on movements in Illinois to partition Chicago and Cook County into their own state. Indiana lawmakers have also gotten involved, talking about annexing some counties in southern and central Illinois. Joining us for this was Lorette Newland, director of the Illinois Separation Referendum, G.H. Merritt, chairwoman of New Illinois, Eric Cunningham, founder and editor-in-chief of Elections Daily. He's written about the history of secession movements. And Dana Balut, who helped produce and write the podcast The Last Resort, which looks at similar movements in California. No live calls, but you will still hear callers from when we first aired this back in March. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're listening back to our conversation about movements in Illinois to partition Cook County and Chicago into their own state. Our guests for the hour were G.H. Merritt, Chairwoman of New Illinois, the nonpartisan organization looking to educate Illinoisans on how they can pursue formation of a new state; Laurette Newland, Director of the Illinois Separation Referendum. The organization has put partition questions on downstate county ballots. Dana Balut, a documentary producer based in L.A. who helped produce and write the podcast The Last Resort, which looks at similar movements in California. And Eric Cunningham, founder and editor-in-chief of Elections Daily. We had asked our texting group about this when we first aired this conversation. Ann in Urbana said, having lived in both Cook County and Champaign County, I've never felt that Cook County got preferential treatment. As a matter of fact, I wonder if Central and Southern Illinois don't benefit from having Cook County in our basket. It's what keeps our state democratic, which means we're somewhat shielded from some of the disturbing craziness that's happening in Washington, D.C. Even people who don't agree with our state government are benefiting from it. And Lloyd in Danville said, in part, the Cook County issue is troubling in terms of revenue distribution. I'd like to see Illinois taxes seriously addressed. Changes in workers' comp laws would help attract more businesses. And moving Illinois counties to Indiana is just plain wrong. We're on tape for the hour, so no live calls, but we did get plenty when we first aired this conversation in March, such as Liam calling from Springfield.
Okay. My name is Liam. I live in Springfield, Illinois. I'm from Ireland originally. I was raised in the south side of Chicago. And from there, I moved to New Lenox, Illinois. From there, I moved to Carbondale, lived in Carbondale. And from there, I moved to Joliet, Illinois. And I said, I currently live in Springfield. I don't understand all this. I think the problem is people need to get out more and talk to each other. My experience is that people generally in a small town or in a large urban area like Chicago are generally the same. Yes, large urban areas do have their issues because of the density of the population. But I did look up something which I found interesting. In 2019, the number of tourists that visit Chicago was 61.58 million. In 2023, it's 51.96 million. And the tourist expenditures in Chicago, that money spent, was $9.6 billion. And as somebody said earlier, that money, I will guarantee you, impacts and helps the rest of the state. But my main point is people need to get out more and talk to each other. Generally, people are the same. And I don't understand this issue at all. Okay, you guys have a nice day.
All right, Liam, thanks for that call. Todd is calling from Johnson County, Illinois. Todd, thank you for calling in. Todd, you're on. Hello, are you still with us? All right, I think we might have lost
Hello?
Todd. Oh, Todd, are you with us from Johnson County?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, you're on the air. Talk. How do you feel about this idea of separating Illinois into two states?
You know, honestly, I would love that. I enjoy Chicago. I appreciate what they do for the rest of the state. I'm more left-leaning, being as how I'm at the southern end of the state. I'm a little more left-leaning than most of my coworkers and friends. But a lot of it, we feel like we're just absolutely not represented. It's a very tall state. But we kind of feel like we're not represented. We feel like Chicago sucks up everything. Champaign-Urbana sucks up everything. And Springfield itself sucks up everything. They take our tax dollars, it feels. We get a lot less infrastructure money than a lot of the northern sections of the state do. And Southern Illinois is just
I'm going to interrupt you there because this is a point I wanted to get out. And I mean, I'm not going to put you on the spot here, but John Jackson at Southern Illinois University has analyzed these numbers. And this is from a story I did back in 2018. So it's a little out of date, but I'm sure it's directionally still accurate. The Collar counties around, the suburban counties around Chicago get 50 cents back for every dollar they pay in taxes. Cook County gets 90 cents back. Central Illinois gets $1.87 back for every dollar they pay in taxes. And in Southern Illinois, they get $2.81 back for every dollar that goes to state government and Springfield.
And, you know, John Jackson, again, he's a Southern Illinoisan himself. He's got that rural accent. And he acknowledges it's deep. This idea is deeply ingrained in the political culture, but the reality is just not there. And I guess, Todd, thank you for calling in on that. GH, let me come back to you. What do you say to that? That, I mean, how would Illinois fare as a state? We're a powerhouse economically right now with Chicago and Cook County. How would we fare without that economic engine?
Well, this is very complicated. We have economic advisors from outside of our organization, including people of a national stature. What one of them told me is that separated from Cook County or old Illinois, we would have a GDP and a population that would exceed that of Indiana. And to the issue of Professor Jackson's study, there is a rebuttal to it on our website because the numbers in that study are not good. It is a flawed study. And the person that helped me write that rebuttal used to be the head of Citibank in a couple European countries. So I'm not a CPA, but he definitely has the ability to look at those numbers. But I also wanted to respond to something that Eric had talked about when he talked about the one man, one vote that came out of Reynolds v. Sims. That sounds so fair, but it isn't. When this country started, there was something called the Great Compromise. That's why we have the Senate is by geographic area and the House is by population. They did that so that the minority voice would not be squelched. They did that so that the big states wouldn't completely take everything over. And so prior to Reynolds v. Sims, the states modeled their state government, their state legislature after that, where you may not have had a one-to-one relationship of counties to Senate seats, but they were geographically fixed. And even though there's always historically been a divide in Illinois, what that did was somehow maintain a balance. When Reynolds v. Sims was decided, our U.S. Senator Everett Dirksen warned that in any state with a sizable city, all power of state government would be absorbed into that city and the rural people would lose their voice. And so that's the problem. It sounds fair to say one man, one vote, and yeah, you represent people, not acres and trees. But the fact is that made it so there is no voice. One illustration, I think Pat Quinn is a great guy. He was an ethical governor, which is saying something in Illinois. And yet, if you look at the map from when he was elected governor, he carried four counties out of 102, and he could have carried just Cook County and been elected because the margin of victory was so high there. And so that's just a visual illustration of how since Reynolds v. Sims, there's a large swath of the population that has no voice. And so laws are passed that may be perfectly legitimate for a densely populated urban area, but that are not in the best interest of the rest of the state. And that's, so we're not a political group, but this is just the reality of kind of like our forefathers said, they didn't want taxation without representation. And that is the reality outside of Cook County.
Yeah, you mentioned he carried four counties, but he did get 1.7 million votes. And, you know, it was a very narrow, and that was the narrowest election. I mean, Pritzker won.
I understand that. Yeah. My point, though, is if you look at the map, you will see that those votes for him were pretty much concentrated in one place. And nothing against Pat Quinn, just that we have a problem in this state that the people outside of Cook County, in fact, you could even look at Davis v. Bandemar, where the Supreme Court says if the resulting vote, if the political maps in the state if they consistently degrade a voter's or a group of voters' influence in the political process as a whole, that's a violation of the 14th Amendment.
We're coming short on time here. I do want to play another one more piece of tape, and this is our governor, J.B. Pritzker, responding specifically to the thought. I've asked him about this idea of partition in past interviews, and he says I've campaigned in every county in this state. He visits counties all over the state. But he was asked earlier this year specifically about this idea of Indiana taking on some Illinois counties.
I don't think that it's very attractive for anybody in Illinois, where wages are higher, where the standard of living is higher, and where we do provide health care for people who are in need.
Lorette, if you had the governor in front of you, what would you say to him?
Well, I would say that he needs to stop saying that we are one Illinois. We aren't, and we haven't been for a long time. And to the legislators, I would say your job is to represent us, specifically your district. But if those referendums demonstrate the will of we the people, you should acknowledge that. The Declaration of Independence says the government derives its power by the consent of the governed. So the Speaker of the House and the Senate President should allow the statehood bill to be heard and voted on. And depending on that vote, the government should respect that they no longer have the consent of the governed and let us go.
GH, I think I'm in with you, and we have just about a minute left. I do wonder if, I mean, you're telling people they can have this solution that is, it's a real long shot, I think, if we're honest about it. You have to have the Democratic General Assembly get on board with it. Mm-hmm. You know, people could be directing their energy toward running for office or, you know, trying to pressure legislators to draw districts that more proportionally represent people here. And I guess part of me worries that you're telling people they can kind of wish away their fellow Americans who have different ideas on political issues than them. Mm-hmm. How do you respond to that?
I don't think that's true. There's people of all political parties that live in all parts of Illinois. What we are saying is that since Reynolds v. Sims, you've had a gradual shift consolidation of power in one county, and the government doesn't represent the people outstate in Illinois. And so we wish Chicago well. Some of these laws that get passed, they're in the best interest of a densely populated urban area. But when all the power shifted, that allowed them to have some of the most egregious gerrymandering in the country. The Princeton Gerrymandering Project gives Illinois a grade of F. Common Cause gives Illinois a grade of F. And so it has been their goal to drown out the voice of people outstate. And that's what this is about. We want representative government, meaningful representative government for all the people outside of Cook County.
G.H. Merritt is the chairwoman of New Illinois. Lorette Newland is director of the Illinois Separation Referendum. Dana Balut is a documentary producer based in Los Angeles. Helped produce and write The Last Resort, which looked at separation movements in California and Oregon. And Eric Cunningham is the founder and editor-in-chief of Elections Daily. Interesting conversation today. Thank you all so much for being a part of it. I appreciate your time. And that is all the time we have for today. Coming up tomorrow, we're dedicating our entire program to nuclear energy. Some see it as an essential part of our transition away from carbon-based energy sources like gas and oil. But others see it as an irredeemable and potentially existential threat to humankind, especially when we turn to the subject of nuclear weapons. My guest will be Catherine Huff, professor at the University of Illinois, who's dedicated her work to this subject. Before we go, please consider joining our texting group. It's the most popular way for listeners to share comments and questions on the show. You can join by sending the word TALK to 217-803-0730. Again, TALK, T-A-L-K, to 217-803-0730. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Harrison Malkin, and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Kulsum Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.